This morning we have the opportunity to do something in preparation for the Yom Tov of Shavuos, and what I thought to do this morning was to take some very practical takeaway messages and lessons for all of us from Megillas Rus, which is read, which is laying on the Yom Tov of Shavuos. So let us begin with the most basic and fundamental question, and that is, why do we even lay Megillas Rus on Shavuos? Where does this come from? What is the connection to this holiday? And why do we do this particularly now? So let's look at some of the ideas that are quoted, and I only chose the ones, obviously there are many that are suggested, but I only chose ones that are going to have an important takeaway message for us and something that we can try to think about as we enter the Yom Tov of Shavuos. Number one, we are told, Chazal tell us that Shavuos is the day that David HaMelech was born. Shavuos is the day that David HaMelech died. The Torah tells us, Es mispar yamecha amalei, that David HaMelech died on the same day that he was born, which is something that is a very unusual privilege. And David HaMelech, all of that happened on Shavuos. Being that David HaMelech comes from the family of Rus HaMoaviah, since he is a descendant of that matriarch, therefore, we read the story of David HaMelech's beginnings. When we read the story of Rus, that reminds us of where David HaMelech came from. Now, I find this to be very interesting, very mystifying, I should say, because we have an Isser in the Torah that's referred to as Ona'as Devarim. Ona'as Devarim means many things, but Ona'as Devarim basically means you're not allowed to tease people. You're not allowed to make them feel bad about something negative about themselves. So, for example, the Gemara says, let's imagine you have somebody who had a very troubled past, and over time they matured, and now they put their life in order, and now things are going well, and they're way past that original hurdle, wherever it was that they were stuck way back when in life. For you to go back and remind that person of the way they used to behave, or the experiences you saw them being involved with, at this stage in their lives would be a violation of Ona'as Devarim, because after all, we know that that's not something I'm proud of, it's not something I'm happy about, it's something I'm ashamed of, it's something I'm embarrassed of, and therefore the Torah says, you would not be allowed to remind somebody of their shameful history or their shameful past. So let's think about the origins, the birth of David HaMelech, and whether or not this is something that we should be celebrating. Where does David HaMelech come from? I would say it's probably not the most honorable and distinguished place. I would say that if any of us were looking into a shidduch for our child, we probably would nix somebody like David HaMelech, because after all, he really didn't come from such a kosher origin. So let's try to understand a little bit about it. For starters, Rus HaMoaviah, who is the matriarch of this family, who's the progenitor of David HaMelech, she's the one who initiated this whole relationship. Let us not forget that Rus HaMoaviah was referred to as such because she came from the town of Moab. She was a non-Jewish princess. So David HaMelech's mother, or great-great-grandmother, was a non-Jewish princess, who then marries a Jewish man. So for starters, the Yichus is not really that great over there. We then go a little bit further into the history of how David HaMelech came to be. Well, who did Rus have a child from? She was originally married to a Jewish man whose name was Mahlon or Kilion, the two children of Elimelech and Naomi. And as we know, those two men died. She then goes ahead, travels back to Eretz Yisrael. We'll get more into the story a little bit later. Travels back to Eretz Yisrael, stands on the side of a field somewhere, tries to tempt and seduce a Jewish man. And in doing so, she finally is successful in arousing Boaz enough that he comes and has some kind of intimate relationship with her, from which David HaMelech is born. I would say that's a pretty big strike too. So you're a non-Jewish woman who then seduces some kind of Jewish man who you don't even know on the side of the field in the middle of nowhere, and from that is born David HaMelech. In case that was not shameful enough, we then turn to a little bit a different perspective of history. Where does Boaz come from? Boaz, who we said is the father of David HaMelech, Rus is the mother, Boaz is the father. Where does Boaz come from? Chazal tell us that Boaz is a grandson of Nachshon ben Aminadav. Who is Nachshon ben Aminadav? So we all know him as a character from Kriyas Yamsuf. Nachshon ben Aminadav is the one who jumped in when nobody else wanted to go, and he is from Shevet Yehuda. Let's go back just one generation. From where did Nachshon ben Aminadav come from? He was a child of Peretz ben Yehuda. Yehuda, one of the Shvatim, has a son whose name is Peretz. Anybody know who Peretz's mother was? Well, there's a famous story in Chumash that we're all familiar with Yehuda and Tamar. And something very uncomfortable happens there as well. Tamar is married to the children of Yehuda. She first marries one son, he dies. She marries another son, and he dies. And now she's left alone, and she's an almana. And she goes, al eim haderech, and she waits on the side of the road, sounds familiar, and seduces a Jewish man, who happens to be her father-in-law, and encourages him to come and have and initiate a relationship with her, from which is born Peretz, the son of Yehuda. From that wonderful son Peretz, ultimately comes the grandson by the name of Boaz, who then marries Rus HaMoaviah, who then gives birth to David HaMelech. Sounds like a wonderful, wonderful shidduch. And I would imagine, go back into the family albums and start looking back at family trees and understanding where everybody came from here. What's fascinating is it's strikingly similar. You have two husbands who passed away. In both cases, the two sons of Yehuda died, leaving Tamar a widow. You then have the two children of Naomi and Elimelech, their two sons die. Rus and Arpah are left behind as the widows. Rus goes along and then seduces this Jewish man. Tamar goes along and seduces a Jewish man as well. And from there is born David HaMelech, from which comes Melech HaMashiach. And in case that was not bad enough, let me take you back one extra step that maybe you're not aware of either. Rus HaMoaviah comes from where? As we said, from the community of Moab. Who was Moab? Anybody remember? What are the origins of Moab? Well, there was a story in Chumash that we're all familiar with of Lot, and the city of Sodom was destroyed, and only Lot and his two daughters were saved. As we know, Lot's wife perished, but Lot and his two daughters were saved. They wake up in the morning and they look around and they see a world of utter destruction, and they don't know what to do. And they think they're the only people left in the world. Well, we have to populate the world. We can't let the world be destroyed. So, what do? They get their father drunk. And after getting their father drunk, they go and have an intimate relationship with their own father. Incest. So, from this illicit relationship is born Moav. Moav, who is the father of Rus HaMoaviah. So this is really wonderful yichus on all sides. All sides. Everywhere you turn, you have some kind of very uncomfortable origin that leads us to the story of David HaMelech. Now the Arizal wonders, how can this be? Why was David HaMelech born from all of these illicit, inappropriate, improper relationships, all of these things that seem to be very questionable, all of these ideas that if a shidduch was read to me with somebody like this, I would run for the hills. So how do you explain what's the story? Why was David HaMelech's origin so complicated? Well, the Arizal gives his idea al derech ha-machshava, and he says perhaps the reason why is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what a very sensitive soul David HaMelech was and how great a personality he was going to end up being. And of course, the Satan was going to get involved and mess everything up. So we wanted, like, you know, we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah, we don't blow the shofar because we want to confuse the Satan. How after a few thousand years he's still confused, I don't know. But the Arizal writes that when it comes here to the story of David HaMelech, we didn't want the Satan getting involved. So you know what? We're going to bring David HaMelech out of the most unlikely of places that the Satan would never imagine to get involved there. And says the Arizal, that was the way to make sure that the great tzaddik David HaMelech would come into the world, which would then bring us to the times of Mashiach. Sounds wonderful. I don't understand what that means. But the Arizal suggests that that is the reason why David HaMelech's history is so complicated. But perhaps something that might be a little bit more relevant to us. I think that suggestion of the Arizal maybe is a little bit mystical, a little bit hard to connect with. But perhaps an understanding that can be a little bit more relevant to all of us would be the following. The Gemara wonders in Maseches Yuma, why was it that Shaul HaMelech, who was a great tzaddik, Shaul HaMelech was a great person. In fact, we're told in Navi, Ben Shana Shaul B'Malcho. When Shaul took over the mantle of leadership, he was 1 year old. Asked the Gemara, how is it possible? You could be the most mature 1 year old in the world, but you cannot be the leader of a country. So how can it be that Shaul HaMelech was the king of the Jewish people when he was 1 year old? Says the Gemara, of course, it's not to be taken literally. Of course, Shaul HaMelech was not 1 year old when he took over the mantle of leadership. What it means is, Shaul was kiven shana lechet. Shaul was such a perfect, pure individual. He was like a 1 year old who's so innocent, who's so perfect, who can't do anything wrong. That was Shaul HaMelech. Well, if that was Shaul HaMelech, asked the Gemara, why is it that Shaul HaMelech's mantle of leadership lasted so short? Why was he cut short? Whereas David HaMelech, who has a very complicated life, and you go through the story of David HaMelech and you read some of what we're told in Navi, again, the Gemara says you have to understand the story, but when you read the psukim, it seems David HaMelech leads a very strange, hard to describe exactly what was going on there, but a lot of strange stories happen with David HaMelech. He doesn't seem at all to be similar to Shaul HaMelech. So why is it that David HaMelech has a long kingdom, a long opportunity to rule the Jewish people? Not only that, it goes down to his children. Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash, whereas Shaul is cut short. Why is that? Says the Gemara, because there was something very lacking with Shaul HaMelech. You know what that was? What was lacking with Shaul HaMelech was that he didn't have a kupa shel shratzim tiluya lo me'achorav. Yeah, you heard correctly. He didn't have a whole bunch of things hiding in the closet that were connected to him. What does that mean? David HaMelech had dofi mishpacha. David HaMelech had a lot of very complicated history. Shaul HaMelech just came to the world as a pure person with a lot of yichus from a perfect family, and that was his downfall. But because David HaMelech came from this complicated past, that's what made him successful. It says the Gemara, from here we learn a halacha, Ein ma'amidim parnes al hatzibur. We are not allowed to put someone in a communal position, in a position of leadership. Ela im kein kupa shal shratzim tiluya lo me'achorav. Unless he has something deficient in his past. What does that mean? We're not looking for failures. To the contrary, we're looking for people who are successful to overcome their failures. And that's the greatest leader you'll ever have, because that person can understand when other people make mistakes. That person understands what it means to overcome hurdles and obstacles in their life. And that is the successful leader of the Jewish people. And perhaps what we're being taught here is, David HaMelech does not come from a perfect background. And David HaMelech is not from the greatest of yichus. To the contrary, David HaMelech is probably from the worst of yichus you've ever encountered. But yet, David HaMelech rose above all of those obstacles, and David HaMelech became the great leader of the Jewish people. David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. We're still talking about him thousands of years later, in spite of the fact that he came from Moab, and his mother was not Jewish, and in spite of the fact that he comes from the union of Lot and his daughters, and everything wrong about his past with Tamar and Yehuda, all of this put together brings us to David HaMelech, which is the perfect person to learn from. The Torah does not expect any of us to live a life where we are going to be perfect. What the Torah wants of us is to take all of the challenges that we have, and we all have challenges. We are all human beings, and we all make mistakes, and we're all going to fail. That's the reality of life. There is no perfect person in the world. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov lo yechta, says the Pasuk. There is no individual in the world who doesn't make mistakes, who doesn't do things wrong, who doesn't get caught up in the wrong crowd, who doesn't have the wrong friends. Life takes over sometimes. And sometimes, as a result of our spouse, as a result of our children, as a result of our community, as a result of our poor decisions, whatever it might be, we do things that we shouldn't do. And we're involved in things that we never imagined ourselves being involved in. But what we learn from David HaMelech is that with all of that, with all of that complicated past, you can rise above it. You can look past it, and you can become a great person like David HaMelech. That is what we talk about on Shavuos. Why do we talk about that? Because the Gemara has a fascinating exchange in Maseches Shabbos Daf Peches about the origins of Kabbalah Satorah. We read the story on Shavuos, we read about Kabbalah Satorah in Parshas Yisro. Sounds very exciting. Hashem came down onto the mountain, Har Sinai, sounds wonderful, all great. But in fact, there was a backstory there. It was not so simple. HaKadosh Baruch Hu invites Moshe Rabbeinu to come up to Shamayim, to come up to heaven, to accept the Torah on behalf of the Jewish people. And the Gemara says when Moshe Rabbeinu gets there, he is attacked by the Malachi Ashares. And they say, Mal Yulud Isha Beinenu. What is this person who is born to a mother and father doing amongst the angels? He's out of place. He doesn't belong here. What is he doing here? Mal Yulud Isha Beinenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, I've invited him here because I would like him to accept the Torah on behalf of the Jewish people. And the Malachi Ashares respond, Tein Hodcha Al HaShamayim. Why would you give over the Torah to human beings? Keep it up here in heaven. Aren't we all perfect? We are angels. We're malachim. We are the perfect candidates to keep the Torah. Why would you give it over to human beings who are going to do terrible things? Look around in the world and see how destructive human beings can be. Why would the Torah be given to human beings who can make so many mistakes, who can do so many things wrong, who are certainly not going to follow everything that the Torah expects of them to do? Why would you give it to them? Ask the Malachi HaSheris. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, why don't you answer them? And Moshe Rabbeinu starts going through the Aseres HaDibros, and he says, it says in the Torah, Kabed es avicha ve'asimecha. That's something that's not relevant to the life and experience of a malach. Obviously, the Torah was not written for you. The Torah says, lo sigzo. Torah says, lo sinaf. Torah tells us, don't be inappropriate with other people. Well, how can that be relevant to the Malachi HaSharis? They don't have any inclination to do anything wrong. So how can lo sigzo be something that's relevant to their lives or their experiences? And ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu takes it and brings it down to the Jewish people. But we have a line, we have a phrase in the Gemara where we're told, lo nitna Torah lemalachei hasharis. The Torah was not given to the angels, the Torah was given to us human beings. You know what the Torah says right after Kabbalah HaTorah? The Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, ve'anshei kodesh tiyun li. The Kutzker Rebbe suggests, you know why we're told that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say, malachei kodesh tiyun li. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say, I want you to behave and act like angels in the experience of life, but rather, Ve'anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. Take all of your complicated history, take all of your complicated circumstances, take all of your failures, take all of your problems, take all your challenges and all your inclinations to do wrong, and that's how I want you to serve me. Ve'anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands, Ki Hu Yada Yitzreinu, we say it in the davening. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that we were all created with tendencies to do things wrong, to make a mistake. To give us bechira means to take a huge leap of faith in humanity and to say, I trust and I believe in you that you're going to do right, but I know that you can possibly do wrong. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah anyway, because the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted us to contend with all of that. And don't think that because you may have done something that was not appropriate, because you may have done something that was not exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected of you, don't think that because of that, you don't have a relationship with the Torah. Don't think that that's what it means. David HaMelech comes to teach us, look at where I came from. Look at what I'm all about. Look at my origins. Understand how complicated it is. It's no more or less complicated than any of our lives. We all have our own problems and our own complications, and yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah anyway. And that, perhaps, is why we read Sefer Rus on Chag Matan Torah Seinu, to remind all of us, whatever age we are, whatever stage we're up to, however many failures we have had to ourselves and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are all shayachim to the Torah. We are all connected. We all have the ability to be a part of this experience. And it is something that was tailor-made for us who have these kinds of problems, who have these kinds of complications, who have these kinds of challenges. That's exactly what the Torah was prescribed for. The Torah is the way of life. Ki hem chayenu v'orach yamenu. But the Torah wants us to be human beings in the experience of life. There's a famous saying. It became more famous from Rabbi Frand, but he didn't make it up. It was from a French philosopher in the 1700s who said that the perfect is the enemy of the good. And it's such an amazing statement. It's not an all or nothing phenomenon. You don't have to be perfect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't expect us to be perfect. And sometimes when people are looking for perfection, it holds them back from being good. Just this week, there was somebody in shul who came to me and said that he grew up going to public school and he really did not have a Torah background. And he told me how much he enjoys listening to the shiurim online and he listens all the time. And he's really feeling that he has to catch up because he missed out on so many years. I was very inspired by what he was sharing with me. And then he said to me, you know, but I really, you know, I don't do this and I don't do that. And he's doing a confession, I'm not sure why. And at some point he says, but you know, I did hear in the Shulchan Aruch, it says that during Shmona Esrei, you're supposed to wear your talus over your head, but how am I going to wear my talus over my head when on Shabbos I don't even wear Shabbos clothing? So it's an excellent question. It's a great question. But I asked him, what does one have to do with the other? When it's appropriate for you to realize that you should start wearing Shabbos clothing, whenever that time in your life is going to be, and you're over 70, so it's time to start thinking about it, but when that time comes, You'll figure out how to wear Shabbos clothing. But until then, why should that hold you back from davening properly? Why should that hold you back from having kavana the way you're supposed to? So because the Shulchan Aruch says this, and you don't do that, therefore you're not going to do something else? This is exactly the message of David HaMelech. You can come from a union of Yehuda and Tamar. You can come from a union of Lot and his daughters. You can come from a past of a public school and a lot worse. And a whole complicated history that brought you to the place where you are now. But guess what? You can emerge to be the David HaMelech of your time. And there's nothing that should hold you back. Just because of all those handicaps, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still gave you the Torah. That is reason number one why we read Rus, Megillas Rus on Chag HaShavuos. I think reason number two that is given is because when you think about the story of Rus HaMoavia, Rus was a princess living an extravagant lifestyle, a non-Jewish woman who then engages with the Jewish religion and says that she wants to take upon herself, she wants to devote her life. Ameich ami velokayech elokai. She says to her mother-in-law, Naomi, your God is my God. Uvechal asher telchi eilech, wherever you go, I will go. Whatever you do, I will do. And that is the acceptance of Kabbalas ol Malchus Shamayim. That is the acceptance of the entirety of Torah upon herself. Think about this for a moment. I never say gematrias because I really don't appreciate gematrias at all, but this one's a very easy one. Very easy. If you have trouble, it means you should go get another coffee. Here's the very simple one. Okay? How many mitzvahs are there in the Torah? 613. How many mitzvahs does a non-Jew have to observe? 7. Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach. What is the gematria of Rus in higher mathematics? Okay, give you a second. 606. Not so hard. 606 plus 7 is 613. Amazing. Rus HaMoavia takes upon herself that she wants to be involved. Ameich ami velokayech elokai. I already had 7 mitzvahs on my own. I was an upstanding citizen, but that's not enough for me. I need to take more upon myself. Rus HaMoavia takes upon herself an extra 606 mitzvahs begematria Rus to say, from here on in, I'm dedicating my life to be a part of the Jewish people. And it means I'm going to put everything else behind. And even though I was an aristocrat, and even though I lived a privileged and noble lifestyle, I understand that none of that is worth anything if that life is going to be empty and hollow, if that life is going to be meaningless. And I understand that being a part of the Jewish people is something special. I ask you, if you were given the choice at any point in your life to opt in or to opt out, what would you do? A couple of years ago in one of the local high schools, this actually happened. It was a child who was adopted at a very young age, a few months old. His parents did a gerus on him. And the halacha is that when you have a ger katan, when you have a child who converts as a very young infant, he has the ability, higdilu yucholim limchos. The Gemara says that when he becomes an adult and they inform him of the fact that he was adopted and he was converted, he has the right to change his mind and say, you know, I don't want this. This is not good for me. He has a right to make that decision. Now says the Gemara, we therefore have to present to this child that opportunity. Now this parent chose, for whatever reason, not to tell the child until they were 16 or 17 years old. And at that point, one evening, by mistake, they get into this conversation. And the child finds out that he was adopted. And he says, well, I was adopted from a Jewish family, a non-Jewish family. You were adopted from a non-Jewish family. Well, how did I become Jewish? Well, we converted you. Well, who asked you to convert me? Well, the truth is, the parents say, you have a right to choose whether you want to remain Jewish or not. The child says, I'm out. What do I want this for? 16 years old. Comes to yeshiva the next morning. The Rebbe calls me up and he says, you're not going to believe what just happened. This kid came over to me and tells me the whole story that happened last night. Why the parents didn't call the yeshiva, I'm not sure. But he tells me the whole story and he wants to know, does he really have the option to opt out? I said, yes. Now imagine, he's been raised his whole life, 16 years in his parents' home, raised to be a Jew, going to local Jewish day schools. Now he's in a yeshiva high school. Opt out. I ask you, would you opt in if you were given the choice today? Do you believe, like Rus HaMoavia, that there is nothing more gratifying than the life that we live together as Jews in this community? Serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's a question to ask ourselves. If we had that opportunity to opt out, because let's say we were converted as children and we just found out. Would you hold on to everything, or would you say, I'll do better off in the outside world? This life is too expensive. This life is too complicated. And I don't like the way the Jewish community runs. And I'm upset at this rabbi and that community leader, and I don't like how decisions are made. And you can have all of your gripes. Would you say that as a result of that, I'm going to opt out? Or would you say, like Rus HaMoavia, Amech Ami VeElokayech Elokai? This is a choice that I'm making because I see the beauty, I see the value. And sometimes it takes an outsider to be able to show us the value of what we have. We know that to be true. I'm sure growing up, many of us thought our parents weren't so cool and weren't so amazing. I definitely thought my parents weren't cool. They still aren't. They're not cool. But they are amazing. But as a child, I didn't appreciate that at all. Actually, as a child, I never knew that my father was anything special. Whenever we came home from school, my father would talk to us on Shabbos about what we learned in school that week. Probably half the things our Rabbeim told us were ridiculous and not true. I don't know. But my father never said a word. He always sat there at the table and said, oh, interesting, very nice. Never commented. The Rebbe's always right. Doesn't matter what happened. Rebbe was always right, even though I'm sure he was wrong. We never knew. We never, ever knew. I got older. People started to talk to me. And I thought it was so interesting. Our Rabbeim in school would give us challenges to go home and ask questions and think about things. And every time, my father always knew the answer. I thought that's what fathers do. Every father always knows the answer to everything. Not realizing that my father was different than anybody else's father. And I thought it was so strange. I came back to school. Like, why does your father not know this? It's so weird. And it wasn't until I got older that outsiders made me have an appreciation for what I grew up with. My father is so humble. Never told us anything. Never let off who he was. Never wanted us to think differently about ourselves. Never allowed us to use his name to our advantage. So much so, I'll give you a story, which has nothing to do with our shir. But I was in Neri Yisrael. I went there for high school and then 2 years post-high school. At some point when I was post-high school, I wanted to leave and switch to another yeshiva for whatever reason. And it was in the middle of the year. Now, usually yeshiva doesn't accept people in the middle of the year. So I called my father and I said, they won't let me come for an interview. Can you call them? The Rosh Yeshiva is a student of yours. Can you call him and tell him that this is your son who's coming? My father said, why would I call him? I said, because I would like to go to the yeshiva. So he said, well, you'll go to the yeshiva. And if you get in, then you belong there. And if you don't, then you shouldn't be there. What does being my son have anything to do with your wanting to go there? That's the way it always was. But the way I think about it, is sometimes the people who can give us a great appreciation for what we have are people who are on the periphery, people who are on the outside, and give us an appreciation for what we live with all the time. Sometimes in a marriage, sometimes in a relationship, sometimes we don't appreciate our spouses or our children because we see them all the time. And sometimes we also see the negative side of what they represent and what they are. And that clouds our vision of all the positive that they do. But sometimes it's members of the community who see and benefit from what they do good for others, who give us a perspective and allow us to understand, you know what? You're living with someone great. You really have someone special in your life, and you should take advantage of that. Do you know what my spouse is like? And that's the way that sometimes we gain an appreciation, and it's the same when it comes to the value of what a Torah life really is supposed to mean to all of us. We come to daven all the time. Do we really appreciate tefillah? Do we understand what it means to have the opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Go once to a Baal Teshuva yeshiva and look what it's like when somebody's just starting to learn how to navigate a sitter, when for the first time in their lives they have the opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to ask for anything in the world in their own Shemona Esrei. Phenomenal experience. But we don't feel that because we don't appreciate tefillah, because it's such a mainstay of our lives. Sometimes it takes the outsider, the balas tshuva, to come along and to make us appreciate what a gift we had our whole lives to have tefillah. What a gift it is to have Shabbos. Talk to somebody who converted, and now for the first time in their lives, their phone is off on Shabbos, and they're disconnected, and there's no work, and there's no worry. Do we feel that way? It takes sometimes the Rus HaMoavia to come and give us an appreciation for what we have as the Jewish people. And that is why we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos, to think about how lucky and blessed we are, to challenge ourselves. Would I actually make the same decision as Rus made? Would I say, I'm opting in? This is something that I want, not only because it's a birthright, not only because my parents were Jewish, but because if I had it any other way, this is the choice I would make. With all the pogroms, and with all the Holocaust, and with everything else in our history, I would still make this choice, because there is nothing as great as the life of a Jew. There is nothing more meaningful than this experience that we are all so blessed to have. Would I make that choice? Look at Rus and allow yourself to make that choice. And let's think even further. How old was Rus when she made this decision? A life-changing decision. Course was changed dramatically. She used to be a princess in Moab. And then she goes and becomes a Jewish woman who's poverty-stricken, who moves to the land of Israel with nothing to her name. Nebuch, that's exactly what she is. Lost her husband, loses her whole family, they lost all their money, they have nothing left. And yet, she does all of that willingly at the age of 40. There might be some people in the room who might be above the age of 40. There may be a few of you who are like me, underneath 40. Some of you who might be double 40, correct? But what Rus HaMoavia teaches us is that it's never too late to reevaluate and reassess our commitment to values in life. It is never too late to reimagine and to reexamine our lives and think about what it is that I could take upon myself that might make my life just a little bit more meaningful, just a little bit different. What can I do? It doesn't mean I have to take a dramatic leap like she did. It doesn't mean I have to take another 606 upon myself, but look what she did. And look what she got for it. Look at the outcome. David HaMelech, which leads to Melech HaMashiach, is from a woman who has that commitment, who has that dedication, who has that sincerity, who understands, Amech Ami Velokayech Elokai. So this was potentially the second reason why we read this Megillah on Chag HaShavuos. Because this introduction took me so long, let me skip a little bit, and let's go to something which is the opening words of the Megillah. Opening words of the Megillah is B'shem Ha'ish Elimelech. This man's name was Elimelech, and by the way, he was a leader of the community, he was the Gadol Hador, he was a philanthropist that everybody knew, everybody turned to him for help all the time, and he came from Shevet Yehuda, as we mentioned. He was from a prestigious family. B'shem Ishto Naami, and his wife's name was Naami. What does Noam mean? Noam means soft and sincere. She was a genuine, gentle soul, a very wonderful woman. And they have two children, Mahlon Vikilion. Now the Gemara says in Maseches Baba Basra that wasn't their real names. Their real name was Yoash and Saraf. Why does the Torah here refer to them as Mahlon Vikilion? Mahlon sounds like Machala, like a sickness. Something terrible happened to this young man. And Kilion is the same word as Kilaya, destruction, devastation. That's exactly what happened to both of their lives. Mahlon and Kilion ended up dying. This was really indicative of what was to come for them. It was forecasting what was going to happen in the future. But those were the names that they are mentioned by in Megillas Rus. And what happens? Elimelech dies. And Rus HaMoavia decides, her husband originally had left the land of Eretz Yisrael and relocated to Moab with their two children. And after her husband dies, she stays there. She doesn't go back to Eretz Yisrael. She stays there for 10 years. And what happens? Her two sons, Mahlon and Kilion, marry two local non-Jewish women. One by the name of Arpa and one by the name of Rus, who were the daughters of Eglon Melech Moav. So they went for a prestigious family. For after all, they were from royalty themselves. They were from Shevet Yehuda. They understood that Yichus is important. But they went and married non-Jewish women. A disgrace, a shameful disgrace to the Jewish people that they married these women. What I take away from that is you can have a strong, robust upbringing. You can send your children to the greatest of schools. You can have a fine education coming from an authentic home, a strong home. But surround yourself with people who don't share your values and it is impossible for your children to resist the temptation. Impossible. Impossible. It's not going to happen. Don't think you're going to be the one whose child goes to that secular campus and stays as committed as they were before they went. Look around the community and see how many children have paid the price for their parents being so celebratory over the fact that they're going to go to Ivy League universities. And go talk to those parents whose children are now totally unaffiliated, who are dating non-Jews. I talk to those parents. You go talk to those parents before you make a decision and make sure your decision is right. Can we blame our children? Can we blame our children? What do we expect of them? You put them into the lion's den at 18 years old. What do you think is going to happen? You can be the Gadol Hador, you can be Elimelech, you can be Naomi, a wonderful woman. You can raise your children in an amazing home. You can send them to day school and yeshiva. But you send them out into the world unprepared, and you put them in an environment where nobody shares their values. What do you think is going to happen? You're excited that your kid is going to Harvard? Have you read anything about what's going on in Harvard these days? Have you read? A parent just told me that they're sending their child to Harvard. I cannot wrap my head around it. You're more worried about Ivy League University than you are about your child. And I said to this woman, what's going to happen when your child starts dating a non-Jew? Oh, my child knows they can never do that. Really? Why do you think your child knows they can never do that? Well, I told them they're going to be written out of the will. Okay, interesting discussion to have with your 17-year-old in 12th grade. But really? You're so sure? You're so sure? Look around. Is that a healthy environment for your child? And again, that's with the Hillel and with everything else. I just went to speak in University of Pennsylvania a few weeks ago. It was amazing, beautiful. But even that, they have a sacred space, the Hillel House, which you would think is the haven for all the Jews to be. And it was wonderful. I had dinner with all the students and I gave a shiur. It was really great. Rabbi Leibowitz went the week after me and I told him, this is where the battleground is. This is where we need to be. And that's why both of us went. But you look there. You know how many hundreds of students are on that campus from religious homes? You know how few of the students showed up? Not because of me. I asked around. How many of them hang out here? Whatever. It's a core group of people and it's beautiful. And the ones who are there are learning and are committed and are studying and are really spending time together. But even there, in the Hillel House, it's 3 or 4 floors. I came a little bit early, so I went to one of the rooms they gave me to go work in. I was sitting there, and then in walks a club from a different part of the university. And I was looking around, what is going on here? Why is this club in the Hillel House? I went upstairs to ask them, what's going on in this room? Should I not have been there? And they said, oh, well, the Hillel House rents out the rooms to other clubs in the university. So even the sacred space, which is made for the Jews to be able to collaborate and spend time together, even that is not sacred. Even that is not sacred. You think your children are safe? Go talk to the rabbeim and the teachers in seminaries in Israel. You ask them, of all the students that they have that go to Maryland, and Maryland is a very strong Orthodox presence. I know that now a number of the rabbeim from Israel who come in to visit their students during the year here, they don't go to YU and Landers and Stern College for Shabbos. They go to Maryland because that's where the kids are. And what do they see there? 6 months after they spent a year or two in Israel, the boys aren't wearing yarmulkes, the girls aren't keeping Shabbos. Go, look, the numbers are there. See what's happening. Why do you believe that's not going to be your child? Give me an answer, how you can believe it. I say to people in our shul, I'm sorry I'm going off here, but I feel very passionately about this. You're a businessman, I've said to men in our shul. You would never make such a horrible investment in business, ever, in your life, never. I don't understand. So you sent your child to yeshiva day school for 14 years. You paid this tuition. Why? Send them to public school. The worst investment of your life. Why would you spend all this money to then send your kid to an Ivy League university when they know within 6 months everything you spent all your money on is out the window? Why would you do that? Just business-wise, forget Yiddishkeit. Who cares about Judaism for a moment? Please don't make a soundbite out of that. But just business. Where's your head? You sent your kid to yeshiva. What's going to happen? Now again, it doesn't always happen. What? You can say, I can take on any challenge that someone's going to give to me. I want you to go to the campuses and see what's happening. It doesn't happen to everyone, but go see what's happening. You can. Please challenge me. I'm challenging you to go to the campus and see what's happening there. See what's going on. It's terrifying. Our kids are being lost in droves. In droves. So if you're blessed not to have a child who had that experience, you're very lucky. But that's what we learn from Ruth. You can have an amazing parent. You can have an amazing childhood with an amazing yeshiva, with great schooling, with great education. And you can be in the wrong environment and look what can happen. Everything can unravel so quickly. And it's very frightening. And we need to be aware of that. And that tells the psukim is the story of Mahlon and Kilion. How could it be that they end up with two non-Jewish women coming from the place that they did? The answer is, what do you want from them? They're children. We put them in this environment, and that sometimes is the outcome. The pasuk then goes further and says, they leave the land of Eretz Yisrael. Vayihi ra'av ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land, and they leave the land. In case anyone didn't realize, I'm very passionate about this issue. Because I see it. That's why I'm passionate about it. So they leave the land. They come to Sde Moav. They're living in Chutz La'aretz. And what are we told? Vayamas Elimelech Ish Na'ami. The first thing that happens is Elimelech, this great Jew, dies. And the Medrash asks, why did he die? Was he sick? What happened to him? Why is it that the first thing we know about Elimelech is he moves out of Eretz Yisrael and he dies? What kind of story is that? How did that happen? The Medrash wonders what that's all about. First of all, when we're told about the fact that he died, it says, Vayamas Elimelech Ish Na'ami. Imagine you have somebody who has been a great success his whole life and a major philanthropist and has built buildings all over the place and has done great things for the community at large. And then it comes to the funeral. And what do you say about that person? What do you say? What? All it says is Ish Na'ami, which is wonderful. He was a great husband to this woman whose name was Na'ami, but it doesn't say anywhere about all the great things that he did. All we're told is, Vayamas Elimelech Ish Na'ami. Says the Malbim, at the end of his life, right before he died, he was so pathetic, he lost everything. There was nothing else to say about him at that point other than the fact that he was married to Na'ami. Nothing else to show. So how can it be? You have this person who's a great Jew, who's leading the Jewish community in Israel, who then leaves and then dies immediately and has nothing to show for himself. How can that be? How did that happen? How did that happen? So the Medrash tells us what happened. The Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried to give them messages that they were making the wrong decision. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried time and again to give them subtle messages. It started, says the Psukim, say the Medrash, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away some of their cattle, some of their livestock. Later on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made them lose money other ways. Everything was being ignored. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away Elimelech and Mahlon and Kilion. What more of a message can you get than that? You know, I was thinking recently about myself. I had in the last 3 years two horrible car accidents. My car was totaled. Both of them were hit and run on the side of the Grand Central. I was driving like everybody else. One of them was on the way back from a shul wedding. It was 11 something at night. A car came flying off of an exit ramp onto the highway, dragged me 4 lanes on the highway, pinned me into the divider. My whole car was totaled. 4 tires popped off, and I crawled out the back. I didn't have a scratch. I thought it was interesting that a number of guests from that wedding drove by, texted me, is that you? I wrote back, yes. And they kept going. Okay. So if you ever see somebody stuck on the side of the highway, maybe stop for them. Especially if their car is totaled and they're terrified. So a taxi driver stopped on the side of the highway for me and took me home. So that was interesting. Just saying. I love everybody. So So I had that accident. A few months ago, I was going to a shul levaya that I was supposed to officiate at. Also, once again, I'm on the Grand Central in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning, and a truck didn't see me, literally drove right over my trunk, just totaled the car, pulled back, and drove right off. Again, I'm on the side of the highway, and that was even worse. I had my in-law's car. Yeah, now I'm in big trouble. You see, my mother-in-law's not here today. This is why. So, I was thinking after that. You know, does it mean God loves me or he hates me? What does it mean? Now, some people would say it means nothing. It means there are reckless drivers out on the highway and things happen, which is true. But I do believe that everything in life is a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some way. What the message is, I'm not sure. And it kept me up at night for a long time to try to figure out. So I can look at this as saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really angry at me. Look what he's doing. I bought a new car. 2 days after I bought the new car is when I had that accident at night on the Grand Central. Now I borrow my in-law's car. Now I have this accident. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to tell me? Maybe he's trying to say, be more careful on the road. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to say, stop going to so many events. Maybe. Sit down and learn a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what he's trying to say. On the other hand, you can say, the Ribbono Shel Olam loves you. Look what he did. Twice. You should have been killed in an accident. And twice you walked out without a scratch. Does it make sense? Not really. Have you ever been lo aleichem velo aleinu? Have you ever been pinned by a car against the divider when your tires fell off the car? Have you ever heard of such a thing? This is not normal. It's not the norm that you crawl out of the back of a car after such an accident without a scratch. But you need to ask yourself, what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to communicate? I think it's more of a communication than just be more careful when you drive or don't go out so late at night. I think there's more than that. But this is the way the Ribbono Shel Olam communicates with all of us. And you have to be sensitive enough to be able to appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actually having a communication with you. We don't have the ability to hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice, but just look around and realize there's no other way to explain this other than realizing it is the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that, says the Medrash, was the great failure of the family of Elimelech. That so much was going on, and yet they couldn't appreciate the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam was communicating with them, that he was trying to send the messages, that all the circumstances of life are there for the Ribbono Shel Olam to try to get a message across. So you think to yourself, when the markets go up, the markets go down, when things happen, do we take a step back and ask ourselves, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me? Or do we say, no, this is the way it goes. The markets go up and the markets go down. And it just so happens that you had money in Signature Bank. So, now there's a reason why you put your money in Signature Bank. There's a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted you to go into that Shabbos, knowing that you may lose everything you have. There's a reason for it. You can chalk it all up to the economy, to inflation, or to anything else that's going on in the world. Or you can take a step back and be a serious Jew and ask yourself, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me? And that was the great failure. That was the great failure of the family of Elimelech and Rus. In fact, we're told, the Gemara tells us, Echad mibnei hachabura shameis, it's quoted in the Rambam, if you have a member of a community that passes away, tidag kol hachabura kula. Now that doesn't mean that if you have somebody who has some kind of illness and naturally they pass away, that's the way of the world, that's what happens. What the Gemara is saying is, when something happens in our community and you feel a part of that chabura, yidagu kol hachabura. Everyone should be concerned. Everyone should take it to heart. Why should we take it to heart? It's not my family. It's not my child. It's not my parent. This is not my issue. The answer is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing things around you. The Ribbono Shel Olam is doing things around you, and there's a reason for that. It means he wants you to take it seriously. Now, we don't have Nevi'im who have the foresight or the insight to be able to tell us what exactly the interpretation of all of those things are, but there is a reason. There's a reason why these things happen. We say in Parshas Ha'azinu, and whenever we go to a Levaya, whenever we go to a Beis HaKvaros, we always say, Tziduk HaDin, where we accept the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what do we say? Hatzur Tamim Pa'alo Ki Chol Derachav Mishpat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is honest and upright. Kichol derachav mishpat. Everything he does is proper. So what exactly does that mean? Why do we have to say that? We know that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is proper. Do we really need to state it out loud? And the answer is, the Gemara tells us as follows. Imagine if you have I don't know if it's a Gemara or a Medrash, or I didn't look it up this morning, but we're told in Chazal as follows. Imagine if you have somebody who's standing trial for a terrible, heinous crime that they have committed. Well, the judge has a responsibility to make a ruling, to make a judgment on the facts that are presented on this case. Now, does a judge have a right to say, yes, unfortunately, you know, I'm going to have to put you in jail. You know, you're a murderer. Cold-blooded murder. We have videos that show that you did this, that you're guilty as can be. There's no way out. But he has like six little kids at home. What are we going to do? We can't put him in jail. That's not fair. So a judge doesn't have a right to say that. You can't let a murderer run around the streets just because he has six children at home. So we're going to have to put you in prison, even though we know your children are going to suffer the consequence, and it's a terrible thing. But that's what we need to do. When we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say, Hatzur ta'amim pa'alo ki chol derachav mishpat. Chol derachav mishpat means that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu inflicts somebody with anything, with a tzara, he took into account everyone who's going to have agmas nefesh as a result of that person. So say, for example, I have a best friend, I have a next door neighbor, I have an acquaintance, I have whatever it might be, whose child is diagnosed with cancer. And it keeps me up at night, and I really have agmas nefesh. Of course the family is kept up at night, and of course they're terrified, and of course they need to do whatever they can to try to save this child's life. But it's really bothering me. It really hurts me, because I'm a sensitive person. And I'm crying about it. You should know that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that gzeira, that that child should have whatever illness they have, we don't understand why he did that, but you need to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took your feelings into account when doing so as well. He knew that you were going to have agmas nefesh, and he said, it's still worth it, because you need to have that in your life. That's what it means, ki chol derachav mishpat. Which is why, the Rambam says, echad mibnei achabura shemeis, yidagu kal achabura. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu took all of that into account, then when we go to a tragic levaya and we're all crying and we all feel sad, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with me also. It means that he wanted me to have that sense of loss, that sense of being bereft in life. Why? I don't know. It requires introspection. It requires us to think a little bit. But that's what we're told was very much lacking with the understanding of the family of Elimelech, that they didn't see that perspective. But why did he die, asked the Medrash. What happened to Elimelech? Was he sick? Writes the Medrash, what happened was, Vayihi Rav Ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land of Eretz Yisrael, but this was not the first time in Jewish history that there was a famine. We go back in the pages of Chumash and we find Avraham Avinu had a famine, Yitzchak had a famine, all the greats of our people dealt with a famine, Yaakov Avinu had a famine, everybody dealt with a famine. What's special about this famine? What happened here? And why was Elimelech seemingly punished because of the famine? What happened? Says the Medrash as follows. An amazing Medrash that I think is extremely important and relevant for all of us. Says the Medrash, immediately when the famine came upon the land, Elimelech said to his family, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to have the entire Jewish people lining up at my door for handouts. After all, I'm the wealthiest man. Everybody knows that I have storage houses filled with food. Everybody knows that I can take care of them. I don't want to be busy with this. I want to go and be the one who has to take care of the entire community. I have to sit there all day and give out food to everyone and ration properly. That's it. We're moving. Picks his family up and he moves out of Eretz Yisrael. We're going to avoid this headache. And as the leader and the shofet and the philanthropist of his generation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says as follows, you think that I gave you all this gift, all this bounty, all this blessing, and here's your moment. Here's your moment to use it. Here's your moment why I entrusted you with all of this gift and blessing in your life. And you're going to run away from the opportunity? You're going to hold it to yourself? You don't see the bigger picture? You think I gave you all this money because I want you to be rich? You don't understand that I gave you all this money because I trust you, because you're my delegate, because you're my emissary, because I believe in you, that you can do something positive with it. And he failed to recognize that awesome responsibility. He failed to recognize how overwhelming the obligation is on a person who is blessed with a talent, with a gift, with something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you. He didn't realize that. And he shied away from it. And he expected that if God gave me the money, I have the right to do whatever I want with it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns back to him and says, "You're worth nothing. We don't need people like you around in the world. We entrusted you with a gift. We entrusted you that you were going to do what you needed to do when the time came, and you failed us." First pasuk, Vayamas Elimelech, the moment they leave Eretz Yisrael, and he has this attitude, that the reason I'm leaving is not because I need to save my family. It's not because there's a famine here and we can't take care of ourselves. But I'm leaving because, says Elimelech, I'm going to have Kshabo Shnei Ra'avo, now that there are years of famine, Achshav Kol Yisrael Mesavavim Bepischi, I'm going to have lines of Jews outside the door, Zebekupaso, each one with his little basket asking me for a handout. Amad Ubarach Lo Mipneihem, I'm out of here. I don't want to be busy with this. This is not what life is about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you think life is about your trips to Aruba? You think life is about your trips to go to Italy? That's what you have money for? Enjoy life. But realize, when the moment comes that you need to step up and use your money for other people, that's the only reason I gave it to you. It's not because you're so privileged. It's not because you've done so much to deserve this. But because HaKadosh Baruch Hu trusts you. And you have broken his trust. And you have not come through. You have failed the Ribono Shel Olam, and you have failed your people. And to that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Vayamas Sham Elimelech, we have no reason to have people like you around in the world. Just 2 weeks ago in the parsha, we read the story of Shemitah. When you think about Shemitah and the mitzvah of Shemitah, you ask yourself, how many of us in the room know anything about agriculture? How many of us in the room have farms? How many of us are going to engage in any of this activity? Why is Shemitah relevant to us? Well, the Rashi on Chumash tells us what the mitzvah of Shemitah is all about. And Rashi says, if you are the owner, you are the proprietor of a major business, and you have a tremendous amount of blessing and bounty in your life, and you've invested, and you've generated a great amount of income, says Rashi, you need to realize every 7 years HaKadosh Baruch Hu built into the Teva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu built into the framework of life, that every 7 years you need to be reminded, says Rashi, Lotino Behem Kebalabayis. Don't think you are the balabayas. Don't think it's all because of you. It has nothing to do with your investments. It's not because you're so smart. How often have you met, I'm sorry to say, it's like embarrassing, but how often have you met a person who's very wealthy and so stupid? Right? Come on, we've all met those people. You think everyone's such a genius, that's why you made so much money? I just spoke to someone in the shul who was a lawyer on a case a number of years ago. Some kind of very complicated real estate deal. I don't remember what the details were. It wasn't relevant to me, so I wasn't paying so much attention to that part. But he told me, amazing, he told me that in the end, the judge ruled that one side or the other, he had nothing to do with it. He was just the lawyer in between. But the judge ruled that one side had to put $28 million in escrow for the other side. At some point later on in history, they're going to be able to take it, real estate, whatever it was. Okay, so they're trying to figure out with the judge and the whole legal team, where are we going to put $28 million? And they put it in none other than Signature Bank. And this man tells me, this was years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. This man tells me, here he is on an Erev Shabbos a couple of months ago. And he's looking, going into Shabbos, at the deal that he was the lawyer for. $28 million in escrow is about to go down the tubes, down the drain. And there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm going into Shabbos, and I'm an Orthodox Jew. And I don't know what's going to happen. You think you have $28 million? And guess what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can take it away from you in a second. Because it wasn't yours in the first place. Because ataloha balabayit, you're angry at God, why did you take it away? Who said he deserved it in the first place? You know, they always say, people ask, why me? You never ask why me when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you win the lottery, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you successful in life. You never ask why me. Why you? Look how many unsuccessful people there are in the world. Why are you deserving of success? He never asked that question. He only asked the question the other way. When people lose everything they have, you say, why me? Start asking yourself, why me when I have a great success? Turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, how lucky and blessed and privileged I feel that you entrusted me with this. But realize that when you're entrusted with a gift, you have an achrayus. You have a responsibility. And that doesn't only go for money. It's not easy. You know, sometimes you look at a person who has a lot of wealth and you say, oh, that's a great life. You don't realize it's a tremendous responsibility that you carry to use it wisely. HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in you. He believes in you. Don't let him down. You let him down, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, then I'll find somebody else who I can believe in. You're not using this properly. It's the same way if I had a stockbroker who's losing all my money, I wouldn't keep putting money with that person. I would stop. I would find somebody else. Because you're not responsible. Because you're not doing the best for my own investments. You keep making mistakes. You keep doing things wrong. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the same thing with every gift and blessing that we have. And that is the mitzvah of Shemitah. That every 7 years we have the opportunity to regain proper perspective. To remind ourselves to change mindset. To remind ourselves that we need to realign our thinking, to recalibrate. The money that you have, the gifts that you have, are all a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. None of them are on your own merit. None of them are because you're so smart. What does the Navi tell us? Al yishalal chacham b'chachmaso, v'al yishalal gibor b'gvuraso. Don't think you're so smart. Don't think you're so great. This is all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki im bezos yishalal hamishalal. What is the only thing we have the ability to take pride in? I find it funny when a wealthy person takes pride in the money that they have. Okay, so you're wealthy. So what? My father always tells me, with all the Agmas Nefesh he had over all the years in YU, and he's had plenty, with all the Agmas Nefesh and this and that, whatever, all the politics and everything, he said he's grateful to Rabbi Lam that for all the years that he ran the yeshiva, he never once asked my father to raise a dime for the yeshiva. Never once. And my father said, because of that, I'm not meshuvah to anybody. I don't owe anybody anything. I can say my honest opinion on every matter. I don't have to answer to people who give money because I have nothing to do with them. And he feels grateful that he's not meshuvah to people's money. But I think about it. Why does somebody who has money think that now they're an expert on education? They give money to a school and now they join the school board and now they say, they're going to give opinions about how the school should run. Why? What makes you qualified to make those decisions? Just because you have money? What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling all of us with the mitzvah of Shemitah is, it's all a gift, it's all a blessing, it's not yours. You're a gizbar shel hekdesh, means you're an emissary of the Ribono shel Olam. You're an agent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You were entrusted to do something smart with this money, to do something smart with the gifts that you have, with the talents that you were given. Are you using them? Every so often do we look ourselves in the mirror and ask, with whatever gift HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, do we use it? Do we share it? The Beis Yosef writes, there's a pasuk, Kabed es Hashem mehoncha. You should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and respect him with your money. Okay, so sometimes we have to spend money on mitzvahs, doing certain things, whatever it might be. You know, the only reason we build a beautiful house is in order that we should have a hiddur mitzvah for mezuzah. What, are you going to put a mezuzah on an ugly house? To put a mezuzah on a beautiful house. That's why we have a beautiful house, of course. Why else would we? Kabed es Hashem mehoncha. You know what the Beis Yosef writes in Hilchos Tefillah? Kabed es Hashem migroncha. Groncha means your throat. You have a beautiful voice. You have to use it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have a nice voice and somebody says, you know, can you daven for the Yamud? You say, I'm not in the mood. What do you mean? Why do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the good voice? You're selfish? He gave you the good voice because you should show off to other people and now it doesn't work for you because there aren't enough people in shul to show off to? It's not why you have it. You have it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to use the gift. And it goes for everything in life. And that's the lesson from the story of Elimelech. I didn't even get through half of what we were going to talk about today.